This week on Making Contact.
We can't match corporate and billionaire dominance when it comes to elections and governments. It's a government by, for, and of the people, not by, for, and of corporations.
The people of the United States have seemingly awakened. People are out in the streets demanding changes to a system in which money controls politics. Some complain the masses have no clear demands, but with little transparency, it's often unclear exactly where to point the blame.
Ohioans deserve to know who's paying for these battles, and when they see a TV commercial, they should know, okay, who's behind this and what's their agenda? And they don't.
On this edition, corporations, elections, and the 99%. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information.
We are the 99%!
Now, what we out here for is that for the government to put the people first and corporations last. What's going on is they put the corporations first and the people last, and this should not be.
Government has been bought. The policies have been bought. The whole system is rotten right to the
core. You know, people are like, what are all these protesters pissed off about? I think that is one of the core things, is that we don't have a democracy that represents the people. We don't have a voice, but the corporations sure do.
Until we get money out of politics, that's the tipping point right here. That's the place to target.
The overabundance of money in politics has emerged as central to the Occupy Wall Street movement. It's a growing recognition that those campaign contributors are grooming candidates, writing legislation, and setting the agenda for entire state legislatures, all to further their interests of maximum profit. One of the clearest ways this process is playing out is with legislation limiting workers' rights, conceived and bankrolled by anti-union companies. The stakes are high for increasingly endangered American unions, and the result is that they have to spend millions as well to defend their very existence. This election day, voters in the state of Ohio will be deciding whether to veto a bill which could decimate workers in one of the strongest remaining union states. In a special collaboration with Truthout, reporter Mike Ludwig went to Ohio, where he found a historic community organizing effort facing off against record amounts of campaign contributions from increasingly faceless corporate donors.
It's a sunny Friday evening in Columbus, Ohio. About 60 people, mostly dressed in union t-shirts and jeans, are milling around the offices of the AFL-CIO. Many of these folks came here after a long week on the job, but there's more work to be done tonight. With only 5 weeks to go before Election Day, the order of the evening is phone banking and door knocking, talking to as many potential voters as possible to warn them about what's being seen as a threat to the very existence of Ohio's working class.
Nobody's fooled. Everyone knows what this is. It's an attack on working people.
Mike Gillis is a communications officer for the Ohio AFL-CIO. He says opposition to Senate Bill 5 has united private and public sector unions in a way never seen before.
It's trying to limit their ability to collectively bargain and organize as working people, so it would diminish their ability to fight for their interests in the elections and elsewhere.
The volunteers organized tonight will be asking Ohioans to vote no on Issue 2. That's the referendum in question, which would veto Senate Bill 5. SB 5 would limit collective bargaining rights of more than 350,000 public workers and force some to pay more in pension and health care costs. After Ohio's Republican-controlled legislature passed SB 5 by a single vote in March, volunteers took to the streets and collected an unprecedented 1.3 million signatures to put a veto of the bill on the ballot, almost five times the number of signatures needed.
As soon as this bill came out of the governor's signature, people were already engaged in saying, what can we do? How can we stop this? And so we had more than 10,000 volunteers out on the ground with petition booklets and getting people to sign.
Melissa Fizakis is a spokesperson for We Are Ohio, the labor movement's main group campaigning for a veto.
And we turned in all these signatures, and literally the next day, I started getting emails and phone calls from people saying, all right, I collected signatures, now what do I do? And it was July. People just couldn't wait.
Senate Bill 5 proponents claim the law will help city governments use funds more efficiently and put public workers' health care and pension costs in line with private sector workers. If this sounds a lot like the battle that took place in Wisconsin earlier this year, that's because it is. The legislation would have similar ramifications. The ideology comes from a like-minded conservative governor. In Wisconsin, it was Scott Walker. In Ohio, it's newly elected John Kasich. And the money to fund the Yes on 5 campaign itself is also coming from similar sources.
Ohioans deserve to know who's paying for these battles. And when they see a TV commercial, they should know, okay, who's behind this and what's their agenda? And they don't.
Building a Better Ohio, a GOP-linked group spearheading the campaign in support of SB 5, set up a separate nonprofit fundraising arm to avoid revealing its contributors and finances. In one of their more controversial ads, they used video of Cincinnati resident Marlene Quinn talking about how firefighters saved her granddaughter Zoe.
If not for the firefighters, we wouldn't have our Zoe today.
She's right. By voting no on Issue 2, our safety will be threatened. Without Issue 2, communities will need to lay off hardworking firefighters to pay for the excessive benefits of other government employees.
But that video of grandmother Marlene Quinn had actually been taken from a We Are Ohio ad opposing Senate Bill 5 and edited to make the opposite case. Here's the original.
If not for the firefighters, we wouldn't have our Zoe today. That's why it is so important to vote no on Issue 2.
Another recent ad featuring Governor Kasich doesn't specifically mention Issue 2. As a result, Make Ohio Great, the group funding the ad, doesn't have to disclose information about their finances to the Secretary of State's office. Turns out, Make Ohio Great is a nonprofit project of the Republican Governors Association, or RGA. Neither Building a Better Ohio or the RGA responded to several requests for comment, but even with the numbers that are known, the intertwining paths of money and influence aren't too hard to trace. The RGA spent millions of dollars in 2010 on television ads and mailers to help elect both Kasich in Ohio and Governor Walker in Wisconsin. This came only months after the Supreme Court's ruling in a case known as Citizens United, which opened the doors for corporations and unions to directly spend unlimited amounts, both for and against, political candidates. Corporations have been able to use the RGA as a kind of campaign contribution proxy. Consider Coca-Cola and Walmart, both companies with a record of opposing unions. During the 2010 election, Coca-Cola donated $7,000 directly to Kasich's campaign and $10,000 to his transition fund, but gave $75,000 to the RGA. Walmart donated $90,000 to the RGA, but nothing to Kasich directly. The RGA then used those contributions to pay for ads against Democratic incumbent Governor Ted Strickland, who Kasich defeated by a narrow margin.
It seems he tried to pull a Strickland and got busted. Newspaper said it was accounting errors, gimmicks.
Pulled a Strickland.
Private healthcare, pharmaceutical companies, and other corporations also contributed tens of thousands of dollars to support ads attacking Strickland. Speaking at a rally in October, Tim Berga with the Ohio AFL-CIO said the agenda is to eliminate the middle class.
This is an opportunity for the other side to try to cripple organized labor so Wall Street, the super wealthy, and corporate CEOs can have complete control of the public policy agenda to create a permanent low-wage workforce. That's what's at stake here. Okay?
Coca-Cola and Walmart are members of the American Legislative Exchange Council, abbreviated ALEC. ALEC brings together state legislators and corporate leaders from companies like Bayer, Pfizer, and ExxonMobil to draft model bills for state legislators seeking to advance a conservative pro-business agenda. Governor Kasich is an alumni of ALEC, and in 2010, ALEC companies donated more than $500,000 to him and other Republican legislators that supported Senate Bill 5. Mike Gillis from the AFL-CIO says legislation like Senate Bill 5 is part of the bang companies get for their campaign bucks.
It's no coincidence that all these attacks come at exactly the same time and across a bunch of battleground states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, and others. They're seeing the same types of laws being passed in the state legislatures and signed by their governors, who are often in the pocket of the same people.
But the Ohio bill's authors may have made a fatal misstep in their political calculus. While Wisconsin's now infamous anti-union law exempted police and firefighters, those first responders are included in the Ohio bill, and they're not happy about the idea of losing their right to negotiate on their own working conditions. Cincinnati firefighter Doug Stern has been speaking at rallies across the state.
Senate Bill 5, now Issue 2, is unfair. It's an unsafe attack on Ohio's first responders, like myself, to put every man, woman, and child in this state at risk. I'm a firefighter. Let me tell you what I know. I know how many firefighters we need on a fire truck. I know how many firefighters it takes to put out a fire and to rescue someone when time is critical. Any law that takes away the professional voice of firefighters, it's unsafe to the community, and we will not stand by and let it happen.
There's a traditional understanding of Ohio that there's about 8 or 9 blue counties and about 80 red counties. But when the Republican legislature passed Senate Bill 5, they really started cannibalizing their own base.
Chris Harsh is an organizer with Stand Up for Ohio, a group leading the grassroots campaign to veto Senate Bill 5.
They started going after the policemen and the firemen and the teachers in those rural areas that, by traditional analysis, had voted one-third Republican. And when the Republican Party targeted them as the cause of our economic problems, they really stepped on their own foot.
Larry Cohen, president of the Communications Workers of America, told volunteers preparing to knock on doors that the grassroots movement in Ohio is part of something bigger.
You're leading a movement here. You're not just fighting back. We're building a movement. Those students in Madison, they were building a movement, and we followed them, right? Those young workers that are in the park on, you know, fighting Wall Street, occupying Wall Street, they're fighting back.
Many Ohioans have clearly been energized, and the no side has been ahead in the polls for months. But money has also been a major factor. With almost $4 million coming from national union offices to We Are Ohio as of mid-October, the pro-union campaign had actually spent more on television ads than their corporate-funded opponents. But labor activists are expecting to be outspent in the campaign's final weeks, and experts estimate the total cost of the Issue 2 campaigns could run between $33 and $40 million. Whichever side prevails, there are likely to be many more expensive campaign battles in Ohio and across the country in years to come, meaning the ultimate loser could be democracy itself. For Making Contact in partnership with Truthout, I'm Mike Ludwig in Columbus, Ohio.
As Election Day approaches, you can go to our website for updates on the battle over Issue 2 in Ohio, including Truthout articles and an interview with reporter Mike Ludwig on campaign finance reports. That's all at our website, radioproject.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact.
The same rights as humans under law is asinine.
Corporations have acquired all of the rights, but none of the responsibilities of real citizens.
I think corporate person is ridiculous. A corporation cannot have the same rights as people because it does not have the same interests as people. Corporations have one goal, and that's to make a profit. Profit does not account for human suffering, destruction of environment, or destruction of our social structure.
In the streets of cities across the country, the legalese term corporate personhood is becoming commonplace. But what is corporate personhood, and what's the problem with it exactly? In a nutshell, it means that corporations have many of the same rights as people, including the right to free speech. And since courts have ruled that money qualifies as speech, it means that there's no way to limit the amount of money a corporation can spend on political campaigns. It also relates to the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling. The evolution of corporate personhood goes back almost two centuries. Here's MIT professor Noam Chomsky explaining how the concept, which many say is a major threat to democracy, came to be.
Corporate personhood is a real scandal. Corporate personhood is an interesting doctrine. I mean, it goes back to the 14th Amendment. You go back to the 14th Amendment right after the Civil War. Its core principle is that no person can be deprived of rights without due process of law. Actually, there's something like that in the Fifth Amendment, but this expanded it. And the intention, of course, was freed slaves. It meant freed slaves cannot be deprived of their rights. Well, it was never applied to freed slaves. Almost entirely, it was applied to corporations. They're not to be deprived of their rights without due process of law. Over the years, the concept of corporate personhood became elaborated. And over the years, corporations have gotten rights that are way beyond those of persons of flesh and blood. So if you go, say, to Clinton's free trade, or so-called free trade agreement with Mexico, it has nothing to do with free trade, but that's what it's called. It grants corporations rights that human beings can't even dream of. Like, for example, if General Motors invests in Mexico, they have to be given national treatment, meaning treated like a Mexican business. Of course, if a Mexican human being appears in New York and demands national treatment, we don't have to talk about it, but corporations have, these are among the rights that go way beyond persons. At the same time, something added to that. What was added to that was a Supreme Court case in the 70s, which determined that money is speech. Okay, so money is a form of speech. You combine all of this, you get to Citizens United a year or two ago, which says that you can't infringe on the right of these persons, like, say, General Electric, to speak freely by spending as much money as they want to buy an election. I mean, that's the conclusion. So citizens say, here you get a really serious blow at the foundations of democracy, and that's part of the reason why election costs are sure already ridiculous and going to the sky.
That was Noam Chomsky laying out the history. So what can be done about corporate personhood? Well, it would take a constitutional amendment to change federal law, and that has to be ratified by 3/4 of the states. It's a tough hill to climb. But there's a growing movement in local communities across the country. In April, voters in Madison, Wisconsin approved a city referendum calling for amending the U.S. Constitution to establish that only human beings, not corporations, are entitled to constitutional rights. This November, voters in Boulder, Colorado will be asked to vote on the same question. From Boulder, Maeve Conran has the story.
On a late September evening, supporters of the 2H ballot measure gather at a Boulder restaurant to officially launch their campaign.
My name is Laura Spicer, and I'm the vice chair of the Boulder County Democratic Party and one of the campaign managers of 2H. We can't match corporate and billionaire dominance when it comes to elections and governments. It's a government by, for, and of the people, not by, for, and of corporations.
This November, voters in Boulder will be deciding whether to approve a measure stating that only people, not corporations, have constitutional rights and that money is not speech. Therefore, regulating political contributions is not equivalent to limiting political speech. Judy Lubau, one of the original organizers of the 2H campaign, said she became alarmed at the state of the democracy following the Citizens United ruling, and that's what prompted her to act locally.
In my opinion, Congress is bought and the presidency is almost fatally compromised. We can't seem to get real change no matter who's elected. And that being so, one of the few places where we can impact anything is locally. Because, in comparison, there's a lot of us to local government as opposed to so few of us in regard to the national government. So we can make an impact in local government, and that's why Move to Amend is choosing to do local actions.
That group Lubow referred to, Move to Amend, is pushing similar measures across the country, including one that passed in Madison, Wisconsin this past April. These local campaigns are part of a national movement whose ultimate goal is to amend the US Constitution to state that corporations are not entitled to the same rights as people. Elena Nunez with Colorado Common Cause says that while the local measures won't actually change any laws, they'll send a message to Congress that the people are demanding a change.
Well, I think it's important to realize that the constitutional amendment strategy, it's a long-term movement. And the only way that's going to happen is by having citizens in local communities like Boulder take a stand and say that it's important. We're not going to see the change trickle down from Washington, D.C. Anyone who's watched any of the recent debates, whether it's healthcare or the environment or climate change, knows that change isn't going to happen in Washington, D.C.
In August, the Boulder City Council voted 6-3 to put the issue on this November's ballot. Council member Casey Becker and the other two dissenters cited possible unintended consequences of what they described as language that was too broad.
99% of all corporations are less than five people. And corporations include nonprofits and associations and labor unions and a lot of folks that do really good work.
The initiative supporters reject this criticism, saying at this point they're simply calling for an amendment and not articulating what the language of that amendment would be. Macon Coles was the first Boulder City Council member to say yes to the ballot initiative.
The thing that gives me hope with a measure like this is shouting in the dark at first, but our voice will be joined with that of Madison and other people around the country. It is a shout to our leaders at the state level and federal level that we have to change the way in which we treat corporations in this country. They have invaded the public space. They've so corrupted the political process, the body politic at the state and federal level, that really our politics are in a shambles. I think of Wallace Stevens and what he said, and that is, if you listen to this, after the final no, there comes a yes.
Yes.
And on that yes, the future of the world depends. That's where we are now.
I don't think it's well thought out, and I don't think it's a well-considered amendment, and that doesn't reflect well in the city council.
Mark Lowenstein is a professor of law at the University of Colorado in Boulder.
I don't think it reflects well on the city of Boulder. I don't think it reflects well on the state of Colorado in terms of attracting businesses here to make an investment if there's a hostility to corporations. And I think that's what this is all about, is a hostility to corporations.
There's one corporation in particular that Lowenstein feels is being singled out locally. Xcel Energy. Two other initiatives, also on this year's ballot, will ask Boulder voters if they want to form a municipal utility company and break away from the energy giant.
I think there's a connection between this and municipalization of the of Xcel Energy. I think there too there's a great distrust of Xcel Energy, in part because it's a corporation. So I think if you want to have a vibrant economy, the last thing you want to do is discourage people from investing in your economy. And in a small part, that's what this does as well.
The connection between the ballot issues is not lost on the 2H supporters. Judy Lubow says the example of Xcel Energy makes clear why corporate personhood is wrong.
We're also seeing right now that in the city of Boulder itself, there's this wonderful new issue that's called municipalization, where the city is trying to or asking citizens for the right to be able to create and sell its own electricity and to take that right away from the corporations, but to do it themselves. And a huge amount of money is being spent against that campaign, much more than local citizens could raise.
In fact, Xcel has spent $500,000 campaigning against municipalization, including a $250,000 donation to a citizen-fronted campaign. This is 10 times the amount that four groups campaigning in favour of municipalisation have spent. But law professor Mark Lowenstein says critics misunderstand the Citizens United ruling by focusing on corporate spending in elections. Rather, he says, it's really about speech.
Interestingly, Citizens United itself involved a nonprofit corporation that wanted to pay for the running of a film that they thought would influence voters. And so I suppose what people are saying who oppose Citizens United is we don't want that information to get into the hands of voters. We don't want people to see that film. Isn't that a frightening thought?
But the Citizens United ruling has galvanized communities around the country and in Boulder. Move to Amend has chapters in at least 17 states, and nearly 136,000 people have signed their online petition calling for a constitutional amendment eliminating corporate personhood. Back in Boulder at the 2H launch party, supporters are confident of a win in November. The measure has been endorsed by 18 local organisations, including local chapters of the Sierra Club and the AFL-CIO. Six council members have also officially endorsed the campaign, including Matt Applebaum, who says he was initially sceptical.
We get asked to put lots of things on the ballot, and you have to do it very carefully, especially when it's, or at least doesn't seem to be, a local issue. And, you know, I had all the concerns other people did, too, about, well, this isn't going to really change anything after all. You know, you can't really expect to have a constitutional amendment anytime in my lifetime, probably, et cetera, et cetera. But the more I thought about it, you know, what became obvious to me and what has obviously also been clear to all of you in this room is that it's really hard to think of a more important issue. I mean, this is kind of fundamental to democracy at all levels. So it is a local issue, and it's a state issue, and it's a national issue. And when I realized that, it became obvious that the right thing to do was to put this on the ballot.
Colorado Common Cause's Nunez says she's confident of a win this November because Colorado voters have already shown support for getting money out of politics.
Colorado, we have a strong history of fighting for strong campaign finance laws. Boulder has a strong public financing law. Statewide, we passed Amendment 27, which is the campaign finance law, with 66% of the vote. So Colorado voters, both locally in Boulder and statewide, have said time and again that they want to reduce the influence of money in politics. And what the Supreme Court has said is that those decisions that these communities have made no longer carry adequate weight, and they've overturned parts of the law. So now you can see corporations spending unlimited amounts on independent ads in support or opposition to a candidate. So even though Colorado voters said we don't want corporations and labor unions to make direct contributions or independent expenditures, the Supreme Court's overruled their individual voice.
Supporters of 2H say they want the measure to pass by a huge margin to send a strong message to other communities across the country that local action can make a difference nationally.
Yes on 2H. Ready, people?
Along with Boulder, Missoula, Montana will have an anti-corporate personhood measure on this year's ballot. Citizens in Eugene, Oregon and Marina, California are in the early stages of a similar campaign. This comes on top of the 30 municipalities which have already passed resolutions or ordinances abolishing corporate personhood since the Citizens United decision. For Making Contact, I'm Maeve Conran in Boulder, Colorado.
And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. This program featured a special collaboration with Truthout and was part of the media consortium's We the People Campaign Cash collaborative project. For more stories about Citizens United and the effect it's having on money in elections, check out our website or go to campaigncash.org. Check out our website at radioproject.org to get a podcast, download past shows, or make a difference by supporting our work. Like Making Contact on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.